Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Good morning again on Circles of Change. Actually, I should say bonjour, comment allez-vous, because we're greeting Bruce Frankel from New York, fresh almost back from a trip to Paris. How are you this morning, Bruce?
I'm great. Bonjour.
Bonjour indeed. So the Pompidou Center, dance, art, I mean, does life get any better than that combination?
It doesn't, especially when the sun is shining all over Paris and everybody is out, and it really was pretty great.
Well, of course, here in Tucson, we're going from 50 to 90 degrees, so our local listeners can absolutely relate to that parallel, I guess. Well, Bruce, along those lines, of course, one of the reasons you took that trip, just for your ongoing personal learning and expansion and circling back to a city and a country you hadn't been to in a while, but it was also part of, if I recall, this whole idea of new social connections for you, and that indeed was the topic you wanted to pick up on today then.
Yeah, no, it was in part that, and also part of pushing myself to, you know, venture further and learn more. And the issue of social connection, you know, I think I had mentioned that there was a wonderful piece that Jane Brody of the New York Times wrote last week about her own journey over the last 2 years since her husband of 44 years had passed away. And she came across a book as she, at first year, of course, as she mentions in her piece, everyone pitched in and she felt connected. The second year has been a lonelier journey. Mm-hmm. And she came across a book that by John Robbins that prompted her to think about social connectedness, and that prompted me to think a lot about it, particularly because I was also editing a document, a legacy document by a leader of a major business consulting firm, in which he discussed the importance of social connection for people in business.
And in fact, you know, just to clarify too, that John Robbins' book really is focused, he calls it Healthy at 100. So I think it isn't just social connections for how we make the most of our days today, but actually extend our days, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, and study after study for the last 30 years has shown that social connection, greater social networks make people healthier and extend their lives, make them live longer. And in John Robbins' book, what he did was he went and looked at four places in the world where people routinely live into their hundreds, and including Okinawa and Vilcabamba in the Andes, and blanking for a moment, but I'll think of it. At any rate, he visited these places, and not only did he find their diets were largely plant-based, but also there was a great deal of social connectedness, and that's, you know, key. But this is something that sociologists, researchers have been seeing since they began really looking for evidence of this in the 1960s, and they found some pretty phenomenal evidence, as I think you know some of this as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and we have to be careful. That definition of social connectedness, that does not mean LinkedIn, Facebook, etc., although those are manifestations of it or can lead to it, but those are tools. Really, it's the underpinning of the social capital that people are exchanging, their trust, their reciprocity, their willingness to give just to give, that really brings us all together.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, just to divert for a second on the issue of social media and so forth. There is a book out by Eric Kleinberg, an NYU sociologist, who writes about that, and he actually has done his book is called Going Solo, and it's about the movement that's really pretty universal in the world, where more and more people are living alone. Mm-hmm. But living alone does not mean that you're socially disconnected,
good point.
It turns out.
Right.
And what he has found in his research is that actually people who use social media tend to actually connect socially with people more, mm-hmm. not less, as is often imagined.
Interesting, yeah, because it's also a driving mechanism that they use in addition to the personal connection.
Yeah, and they get out. That's part of what his discovery is, that because they're connecting online, they tend to make more dates, go out more, not hunker down as much. And one of the results of that is that they learn from each other and actually, you know, happen to venture into new areas. So, I mean, that's a huge part of what I learned when I was writing my book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life, was that what seemed to really help people to thrust them into become more engaged in what they did was when they took the initial step and became engaged in some way in what they were doing, but also connected to other people, and they found support for their own passion, or what would become their own passion. And so there's really a dynamic interplay between our relationships to other people, our well-being, and how we venture forward. If you're locked in a room by yourself, you're not really going, even if you're reading books, which is wonderful, I'm a huge reader, mm-hmm. but if you're just locked in a room and you're not converging and associated with other people, their chances of things developing in your life are minimized.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think the other side of also just when you're reading, to be in a sometimes a different environment prompts you to learn more in the course of it, whether it be sitting in a library or a coffee shop. You know, to your point, this idea of more people soloing, and particularly as people get older, that happens, right? I mean,
Yeah. Perhaps
in our society in particular, with the families becoming more and more expanded and at different locations, it's always striking to me when you start interacting with someone, regardless of age, by the way, as to their ability to really have good social graces and interact and listen and give and take. More often than not, when I find people that aren't in that space, it's because they've been living alone for an extended amount of time. And it isn't just because they don't have to share or they don't have to plan around or with someone else's schedule. I think there's some other dynamics that kind of close in on them and they don't see the opportunity to broaden their field of view.
Hey, expand on that a little for me. Do you mean that they no longer seem to be good listeners, or...
Well, what can happen is, at least my experience has been, is that they have become singularly focused, because that's how they've been living. And mm-hmm. so not understanding, to your point, this idea of going out more, learning from others, be open to new adventures, the word adventure might be turned into more regimen and scheduling, because there's comfort, or there's the fear of not stepping out.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true, and it's probably becomes habitual. And I think that also there's pretty good evidence that there are changes that occur in the brain.
Yes.
And we know we are a social animal, and we know that with us and with virtually every other social species, that that social connection prompts learning, mm-hmm. and prompts changes in the brain. It certainly changes the human brain, the prefrontal cortex. And if you put people in isolation, and if you put other social species in isolation, they deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
And they deteriorate cognitively, and so the social skills are part of that. And you know, I think that one of the studies that Jane Brody cited was this study in 1983 by Larry Sherwitz, a psychologist at Baylor, of 600 men, in which he looked at the language. He recorded interviews with them, and he looked at their language. And those who used I, me, mine...
Mm-hmm.
I, me, mine, He found that those men were the most likely to have heart disease. When he followed up over, I think it was a course of 9 years, I can't quite remember, but and just those men suffered, had a greater likelihood of suffering heart disease. And, you know, so that's a pretty good indicator that when we isolate ourselves and we then focus on ourselves, you know, the heart may be a lonely hunter, but I don't think that's the way we're really meant to live.
No, and I think also this idea then if you flip it around, then if listening to how others talk, you know, and in fact I have enjoyed reading that article, I thank you for referring me to it, it gives you reason for opening up your mind to other possibilities. And in fact, you know, Jane's journey, she mentions her own of, you know, forging these new social connections since the loss of her spouse. You know, I thought the two things she talked about, and one in particular, was joining a new cause, something to reignite that spark.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I found that was true with the people that I looked at. But also, I recently read a piece by Jonah Lehrer, a neuroscientist who's writing I like a great deal, and he was writing about creativity. And I hadn't really thought about it till this moment, but one of the things that he and other researchers have found about creativity is that even when people are experts in a field, often creativity is sparked when they diverge into a new field. And so often people who remain locked in their own expertise aren't the ones who make groundbreaking discoveries. Often people who make the groundbreaking discoveries are the people who take their expertise and move into an area, throw themselves into an area of which they don't know a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a wonderful psychologist at Stanford, Laura Carstensen, and, you know, I read some of her suggestions, and particularly for age, she says that it's important to build a plan that anticipates the needs of older age and to begin renewing social networks, finding friends, new activities, social organizations, and to build daily routines and lifestyles that match what we envision for ourselves, and that out of that results happiness and better health and well-being. And a pretty good recipe to me.
It certainly does. The other thing it does, by the way, is by you setting a plan and doing it mindfully now, it then creates a rewiring of your habits and your patterns for the day. So it then will become very automatic. So you don't have to work at it after you get, you know, mindful in that place. You know, just like you said, the idea earlier, the gentleman that shifted to a plant-based diet, you know, to do it when you have the ability to make those choices or to sculpt things, because later in life you might not be of mindful sort or have the resources, but it gets you into that pattern now to reinforce the habit.
Yeah, and you know, we all have to kind of keep reinventing ourselves in this way. It's something that I have really become aware of. When I first began working on my book, I set certain goals for myself, and I completed a lot of them. Then, you know, we do have a tendency to get a little lazy sometimes. And so you have to kind of be watchful and mindful about how your own habits change. And it takes a kind of activity, which is, you know, I don't think we teach ourselves or teach our children or enough in this life, is that we have to kind of really monitor ourselves and push ourselves sometimes to take stock, to renew plans, to search out new areas of interest, to join things that are unfamiliar to us. One thing, I volunteered this week with a group that does dance with people with Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York with them to hear a lecture. And I became really aware of how easy it is for us to create boundaries between ourselves and others. If someone is older or younger or has a disease or a defect, we make them into the other. Mm-hmm. And we cut ourselves off from it's a great loss to ourselves, because I learned so much that day, and not about the disease, about what these people that I was with had incredible knowledge about the art we were viewing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we tend to, you know, put people in categories, and that's a great problem.
Well, I think you've mentioned that in particular throughout the course of your book, What Should I Do With the Rest of My Life? Of course, these are people who after 60 went on to do some phenomenal things, very different many times of what they'd done in the past, although some circling back. But it brings to fore that whole thought about the tragedy and loss of our society by not embracing those who are older in more contemporary ways.
Yeah, and I think it's really important as our society is aging at aging, and the aging population is growing rapidly, so that the over 55 population will soon surpass the younger than 20 population, or I can't quite remember the number, but as society shifts, we really have to change this. And we know that having an intergenerational society, I think in our guts, we all kind of know that that's really the best for everyone. I mean, we all learn from each other that way. It will make people who are older healthier, and that's going to benefit society, but it'll also give younger people a chance to gain from the wisdom and experience of people who are older. It just seems so logical.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it, to your point of the experience you shared yesterday with others, getting out of our own patterns and routines to be open to that and get outside of herself is so important. You know, Bruce, of course, many of our listeners are come to our show because they're leaders of change agendas, or they themselves personally are going through a change. So this idea, obviously, of social connections is so important to keep the bigger view of the landscape for leaders, but also for individuals. You know, I can recall a thought you shared with me of someone who was very senior in a management consulting firm, and his advice, or actually his requirement of all his employees, was they had to go out to lunch every day.
Yeah, in the 1950s at McKinsey and Company, when you came there, now that's the premier consultancy in the world, when you started working there, you were told you had to go out and have lunch every day with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way, and people had to learn how to interact in an informal way, so that business wasn't just the agenda, that isn't how social relationships are formed, but that out of those social relationships that you form, other things happen. And Peter Drucker talked about this too, about the need to create really multiple interests in our lives in order to, that it worked both ways. It made us better as people, it helped us help society, but it also benefited our businesses.
You bet, and I think just our own health and mental well-being too, taking that break midday and going to lunch, that's not a meeting lunch, by the way. But then, of course, we all learned the trick that, oh, gee, if we brought lunch in for everybody, then we could keep them working through that one-hour break.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bruce, the whole prospect of forging social connections, I know, is kind of a wonderful overlay for all the different research and activities and so on. Anything you got coming up on the horizon you'd like to share with our listeners who are going to continue to track you?
Well, I'm continuing to work on a book about brain and dance, and that was the reason for going to this great exhibition in Paris that looked at the connection between dance and art over the last 100 years. And so I can continue to work on that. And by the way, one of the communities that John Robbins wrote about in his book was the Hunza community, where dance really is the binding force of the Hunza community. You know, that's kind of, this has been great to think about. You know, I read a Harvard Medical School report that said 20% of Americans view themselves as lonely. And the effects of that are pretty staggering. And that number goes up as people age. And so, you know, I kind of think that we all have an obligation in a weird way. You know, this is to, for ourselves, but also for others.
For others, exactly.
to reach out a bit.
You bet. And Bruce, I can't think of any better charge for action to our listeners today, myself included, to take you up on that suggestion of reaching out to others. Bruce Frankel, his book, What Should I Do With the Rest of My Life? We'll look forward to connecting with you next month, Bruce, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Be well.
Be well as well. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.